Welcome to Way in Sports Talk. Today is Sunday, June 23rd. Tonight, our special guest is Coach Dana Robinson from My Recruit Video. Before we get started, here are a few reminders. We would love to hear from you, and here are several ways to weigh in. Call us at 646-716-5564, or join us in the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/Tarvino, or follow us on Twitter at Way in Sports. Now, here's your host, Brian Tarvin, and co-host, Trey Patterson. Let's weigh in.
Well, hello, everyone, and thanks, Michelle, for the introduction. And just want to touch on what she just said. We have a special guest tonight at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 30 minutes away, Coach Dana Robinson from My Recruit Video. Way in Sports is very excited to have him back on the show to see what's going on in his business, what's going on in the world of recruiting. And if you're a parent out there, if you're a high school kid, you just need to pay attention tonight to what he says, because this guy knows more than anyone I've ever spoken to about developing relationships with coaches and getting kids fit into the right programs. And I'm sure he'll touch on this, but exposure is everything. So if you don't have exposure, you're fighting an uphill battle. And most of the time, Trey, it's not what you know, it's who you know. So welcome Trey Patterson back. I hope you're settled in well. We're glad to have you back. We miss you. How's everything going?
Oh, man, going well. I should have my humble abode in about a week, so I'm pretty excited about that. This is a good sports week we had this past week. I mean, the NBA Finals, some crazy NFL news, the College World Series. There's a lot going on this week for a sleepy June month. I mean, what do you think, Tarvin? Let's talk about.
Yeah, we're going to hit on just a minute. I don't want to beat a dead horse. The NBA Finals, Thursday night, it wrapped up, Game 7. LeBron James, wanted to discuss him a little bit. We have big trade going on in the NBA that just happened with a coach involved, and I'm sure everybody that's been following the NBA knows who we're talking about. College World Series is heating up, and, man, Trey, the big thing in New England we're going to hit on with Hernandez.
Yeah.
I mean, you being a lawyer, I'm glad to – I want to hear your opinions on this and see what you think, because I'm not a lawyer, but I do have an IQ, and it doesn't look good for the man right now. It doesn't look good at all. So we will hit on that. But first, let's get on the NBA Finals real quick. Game 7 Thursday night. And, you know, I've been giving LeBron James down the road, Trey. I'll admit it. I still one of the things I have a problem with LeBron is his aggressiveness to go to the goal. But Game 7 the other night, man, he really showed who he was. If it wasn't for LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Sean Battier, the Miami Heat would have lost to the Spurs. I mean, LeBron James, I mean, are you giving him credit, Trey, for what he did? Two NBA Finals wins in a row, plus two MVPs in a row. Only three people have done that now.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, one of the things about, and I actually hate when I see ESPN or other news outlets sort of drop up the, you know, Jordan did what LeBron did, and Jordan came into the league much later than LeBron did, so I don't like the stats. You know, by 29, you know, they each had two titles, that kind of stuff. What you got to do is say, okay, where is LeBron James, and what is he doing right now? Because, Tarvin, what he did in this series was he came out, and other than those two turnovers late in Game 6, I mean, this guy played pretty darn good in this series. 37 points, 12 rebounds, 4 assists in Game 7, Tarvin. 37 points. I mean, there's not a lot of guys who can hang their name up as dropping 37 or above in Game 7 of an NBA final. So you got to give him a lot of props. I mean, Dwayne Wade also had a double-double in Game 7. You know, other than him and Mario Chalmers and Shane Battier, there was nobody who showed up from the Miami Heat. Ray Allen, Chris Bosh, and Mike Miller combined for 0 points. So there's nobody other than Dwayne Wade and LeBron James who get to say they really contributed, other than Shane Battier and all those threes in Game 7. So, Tarvin, very impressed with the game he put up.
Well, you know, I used to think LeBron James didn't like pressure, but I knew. I mean, he was writing his own script for Game 7. He showed up and showed out. He didn't do it against the Minnesota Timberwolves, Trey. He did it against the San Antonio Spurs in a Game 7 with all the pressure on Miami now. I mean, San Antonio was supposed to lose. I mean, they were supposed to lose. They were playing with house money. And LeBron James, I mean, that last comeback in Game 6, all the fans of Miami exiting. He comes back, takes the team on his shoulders, and then you have Game 7, what he did. Look, you can't compare Jordan and LeBron. There's two big different eras, and Jordan always had a great supporting cast. I mean, besides Dwayne Wade, really, who does LeBron have? I mean, Chris Bosh is terrible. I mean, he's lucky to be traded if somebody will pick him up. But, I mean, yeah, he didn't have a Scottie Pippen and all these other guys around him. I know Dwayne Wade's Dwayne Wade, but let's face it, his knees are gone. He had to have a shot, had his knee drained in Game 7. So it is unfair to compare LeBron James and Michael Jordan right now. But how long is it going to be before people, you know, accept that LeBron James – what will it take for LeBron James to pass Michael Jordan in the public's eyes and all of the media?
Well, I mean, you know, Jordan has six rings. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you know, James has two. He's two for two, or two out of, you know, two wins, two losses in the NBA Finals. That's a key component for when you're talking about legacy. I mean, LeBron James did a lot of playing left. And we're going to see the Heat next year are not going to be the same team, Tarvin. I don't see Chris Bosh on this team. He's not the guy who really – this is not the big three. I think you saw Chris Bosh really exposed. You know, he came out and was so critical after Game 6 and the fans leaving. Well, he never showed up for Game 7. I mean, 0 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists. I mean, Tarvin, they got that out of Chris Anderson. So, I mean, I don't see there's a lot of players they can get for better money for Chris Bosh. And I think, honestly, they're going to want to make a move because LeBron James is coming up on free agency after a year himself, and I think there's going to be a strong pull for him to go to Cleveland now that Cleveland has another number one pick and has, obviously, you know, they have old grandpa playing up there who is doing pretty well in Kyrie Irving. So, you know, Miami needs to make moves now. You think that, you know, this big three, only 3 years ago, put together this team, Tarvin, but they have a lot of moves they have to make to sort of keep some of these guys around because, you know, what we saw in Ray Allen, obviously what a huge shot he made in Game 6, but I mean, these guys aren't built to actually really sustain a season like this. There are a lot of veterans who can play some minutes, but, you know, with Jordan, he had Pippen playing basically 40 minutes a game, and Dwayne Wade isn't that guy anymore. So LeBron James needs somebody else on this team, and definitely is not Chris Bosh. They're going to have to figure out something, Tarvin.
I mean, let's face it, year after year from now on, LeBron James is just going to get better and better and better. I mean, he's a physical specimen. He's a freak. I mean, Michael Jordan was great, but he had nothing on LeBron James the size he has. If LeBron James can develop a little hook shot or something and get more aggressive, I don't think you can stop the guy at all. I mean, they asked LeBron James to guard Tony Parker, Trey. I mean, how many times was Jordan asked to – I heard that on Colin Coward's show. How many times was Jordan asked to guard the best player on the other team? I mean, that takes away from your offense is when you're having to use your energy to guard the best player on the court. But, I mean, they expect the world out of LeBron James in Miami. And you know, you said something very – I mean, it's a good debate here. Will LeBron end up back in Cleveland? I mean, would he go back after the way the fans treated him after his exit?
Well, I think it's possible. I mean, one of the things that a great player like LeBron is going to do is he's going to make sure that he has some cast. I think he learned that playing at Cleveland the first time. You know, he didn't have really another player to really help him out. And I think with Wade, he understands he needs somebody else there. And you want to talk about a final performance, Tarvin. I mean, you can go back earlier in the series and look at his block of splitter on that windmill dunk that he was trying. And you look at a guy who made the defensive play of the series, and he made the offensive play of the series. I mean, LeBron James really sort of put a stamp on this championship. I mean, they were down 3-2. And, yeah, they had to win two. And, yeah, it was at home, Tarvin. I mean, the Heat had to win two. They were on the ropes. And we all know the statistics behind a 3-2 when you're down, even at home. It's an uphill battle. So, especially when you're facing a guy like Tim Duncan who knows how to close these things out. And that's one of the things that I saw on his face, Tarvin, was a guy – who was ready to close it out, and they let it right between their hands, and LeBron James was the kind of guy that you saw when he got that chance, Tarvin, he was going to take advantage of it.
Well, I just want to congratulate him again, LeBron James, for what he did. I mean, just an amazing feat to win two in a row, play for three championships in a row, and you know the two finals that he played in that he lost, I think he learned a lot, you know, what it takes. I mean, 37-12-4, two steals. I mean, what else can you ask from somebody? I mean, he wanted to win that that I mean, it's all on him. If they lost, it's all on LeBron James. And if they win, it should be all on LeBron James as well. So kudos to LeBron James for proving us wrong or proving me wrong. I've never liked the guy, but the more I see him play now, mature, the more I like him. And he just took it on his back, very proud to see what he could do. I'm just interested to see what he's going to continue to do, where he's going to be. And he will be in the talks before long, Trey, with Michael Jordan. I mean, it's just all there is to it. If he keeps doing what he's doing, Michael Jordan is the best. So don't the Chicago fans call in and cuss me out. But LeBron James is going to be in that company. I mean, he already is getting close. So a couple more championships, Trey, and he's going to be right there with them. So let's stay in the NBA and move on real quick. Doc Rivers leaving Boston, and I have a lot of opinions about this. Going to the Clippers, Chris Paul is happy now, and I'm glad the spoiled brat got what he wanted. So it looks like Doc Rivers is going to the Clippers. So Trey, do you think Doc Rivers leaving Boston, going to the Clippers shows that, I mean, he's a coward in a way, or do you like the deal?
Well, I mean, a couple different dynamics to this deal that I think a lot of people don't really – it wasn't sort of mass media attention. One is that Doc Rivers and Rajon Rondo are terribly at odds. So that's sort of the first piece of this. And you got to think, okay, the second piece of the whole Celtics debate is that Kevin Garnett isn't going to be not longer – he's not going to be a Celtic much longer. And Paul Pierce is probably leaving too. So a lot of people thought, well, hey, Rajon Rondo, you can build around that guy. And then I heard a lot of talk on sports radio about, well, why don't they just build around him? He's a great player. He's coming back next year. But Doc Rivers and him actually are terribly – they don't get along at all. They almost got into a fist fight in the locker room earlier this year before Rondo got hurt. So that's piece one. So Rivers wants out because, you know, with Garnett and Pierce gone or leaving, Rivers is going to be left with a guy, a star that he doesn't like. And so Rivers wanted out of the Celtics. And honestly, the Clippers were looking for – you know, a big-time guy because, you know, as good as Vinny Del Negro was in the regular season, I mean, yeah, I give him some props for what he was able to do. You know, he had a 319 winning percentage in the postseason. So it was clear that Chris Paul wanted somebody who was more into his style. So, you know, if you're the Clippers and you want to get, you know, you want to keep Chris Paul, you need to bring in a big name. It was either going to be Byron Scott or it was going to be Doc Rivers. So, I don't know about trading for coaches, Tarvin. That's the big X factor. Is there really a coach worth trading for, worth giving up 3 years, $21 million, and a 2015 first-round pick? Tarvin, I mean, that's the kind of money and picks that you give up for a number two swing guy who's going to play 40 minutes for you.
I mean, that's the kind of money you do for Phil Jackson. That's what you do. Or Pop. Which, you know, I can discuss that. We'll get on that another day. But, I mean, trading a coach, giving away that kind of money, and giving away a 2015, because just think about it. Your first-round pick in 2015 could be huge. I mean, there could be somebody right there just waiting and for a coach. Come on. Doc Rivers, I mean, he's a good coach from what you can tell. I mean, he has a great team. He had Rondo, Garnett, Pierce, Ray Allen for the most part. He's always had talent around him, so – what makes you think that he's going to go to the Clippers and get rid of Griffin and some other guys and with Chris Paul going to take him to the promised land? I don't care if you brought Doc Rivers three times over to the Clippers. They're not going to win the West. It's not going to happen. So I don't understand the move. I really don't like it either. But I have more problem with Doc Rivers doing what he did. He abandoned a Boston team like this, and he talked about unity and staying together, and he jumped ship because he's too scared to stay in Boston and develop these younger players and develop a team and to try to win with that. And so if I'm a Boston fan, I am pissed off, but I'm also glad that I got rid of him and found out his true colors now. So that's the problem I have with this.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of another thing to sort of think about and something I did want to mention, I'm seeing some talk in the chat room, is that KG can't go to the Clippers now. It's actually barred by the CBA because you can't have a coach and a player get treated together. So Kevin Garnett is going to be stuck on the Celtics, at least because he has a no-trade clause. But I see him going for somewhere else. And, you know, this is just a thought, Tarvin, but, you know, I know somebody has to eat Bosch's contract. So what do you think about a possible, you know, Bosch to Celtics and let the Celtics put KG on the Heat? I mean, I don't know. Who knows what could happen over there? But then the other thought is, Tarvin, is there a lot of rumor mill going around that basically Chris Paul is recruiting Dwight Howard? And then that Dwight Howard and Chris Paul might go to the same place. So if Paul goes back to the Clippers, do we have a threesome there with Dwight Howard, Chris Paul, and Blake Griffin?
No, because Blake Griffin's not going to play with Chris Paul, or Chris Paul's not going to play with Griffin, I don't think. And, I mean, Dwight, what do you want, two prima donnas, two divas on your team right there? I mean, Blake Griffin, he plays, he shuts up, and he just plays ball. He's not that great. I mean, he looks good dunking the ball. But, come on, Chris Paul, I just don't know if you play with Chris Paul, how can you have any respect for him at all? I'm tired of players controlling teams. I mean, in professional sports, the players call the shots, not the coaches. So why are you paying a coach $7, $8 million a year? I mean, if a player doesn't like him, you have to get rid of him. So I understand them giving in the demands of Chris Paul, because if you lose him, I mean, what do you have, really? But I'm also going to look at the next time to trade him, get rid of him, and get the next best thing coming up. So Chris Paul is hurting his image just by what he did with his Clippers. He did it in with the Hornets, too, Trey. Let's don't forget that.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the NBA has grown into a league that is clear that a star player can control a player-coach relationship when it goes bad. I mean, when's the last time that you saw a head coach win a battle with a superstar? I mean, they win battles with B-level talent all the time. But, I mean, heck, we can go back to the Latrell Sprewells. I mean, the players win these battles, and that's been the evolution of the NBA, and it's not going to change anytime soon because – these coaches, I mean, there's not a lot of guys out there who are in the very top elite coaches. There's a lot of good coaches. There's some decent coaches. And with a star player, I think you don't need a great coach a lot of times. You just need him to recruit some of his buddies, and then you have a team. I mean, do you think that he have one of the best coaches in the game? I mean, do you? He won two titles in a row. But is he legitimately, if he goes to a different team, would you consider him an elite coach? I don't think I would.
No, but, I mean, this NBA, Trey, is getting – people are watching it now. Kids are watching. It's getting watched more than that game 7 was the second most since ABC took it over. Lakers-Celtics game 7 a few years ago was number one. But the kids are watching these guys play. They're looking at these guys as role models. And all they see is a bunch of guys demanding this, demanding that. If I don't get my way, I'm taking my ball and I'm going home. And that's what society is today. That's acceptable. I mean, this is the problem I have with basketball in the NBA. I like to watch basketball. I enjoy the competition. I like to watch LeBron play and some of these other stars. But, I mean, it's getting to where now there's too much control, and it's starting in the NFL too. All these guys call the shots. So why even have a coach out there? Why don't just stick the GM out there and let him sit on the sidelines? Why do you need a coach since these guys know everything?
Well, I mean, it kind of is. Sorry, I mean, that's what I was sort of getting at, is that, you know, the NBA is really a star-driven team, and the coaches aren't. There's very few coaches who are going to be really, you know, running the team, really honestly, when it comes down to any conflict.
Yeah, so we'll keep discussing this and see how it goes and see what trades. But, hey, did you hear that Rondo and Doc Rivers almost came to blows in Boston a couple of days ago? Rondo didn't like the way how he was doing Boston, really, and how he was treating this whole trade situation. Did you hear anything about this?
Yeah, that's sort of what I was getting at. They went to blows a while back, and then it's an ongoing feud between him and Rondo.
I like Rondo. I mean, he's a competitor. He goes out there and he gives it all he has every game. And, I mean, it's just one of those things. And people have said they're wanting to get in right now. I'm looking. I'm having some studio issues right now, guys. It's freezing up on me. I am in the chat room right now, but I'm trying to get this resolved before 9:30. So I don't think we'll stay on this topic much longer. So we're going to have Coach on, and I'll get to y'all in just a few minutes. So, Trey, just want to mention something about – we're going to get off basketball real quick. There's a college football fan out there that passed away. And, you know, I read it and I was amazed that – I don't know if you read this – that Alabama fan, Dick Coffey, he died at 91 years old. And he made it to 781 straight Alabama games. I mean, that's a fan right there, Trey, man. Looking at that, he's went to every road game, every bowl game, every game. Since what was it? I think it was he went to Furman. It started like in the 40s, I believe, he started this streak. But can you imagine? Yeah, 1946, that's 56 season, he went to every game. I mean, that's a true fan. If you say the word fan, that's a wow. I just can't imagine going to that many games in a row. And rest in peace, Mr. Coffey. But, I mean, he's an Alabama guy, Trey, but you got to give your props to him.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you can abbreviate the word fanatic for a guy like that. I think you have to use the whole word for that one, Tarvin.
I mean, just through all of that, and the record holder, believe it or not, was 797 games. A USC fan. He died in the parking lot in the 1998 Rose Bowl. So, I mean, what a way to go. I mean, you know he wanted to go something with USC. You go to that many games, he holds the Guinness Book World Record right there to die in a parking lot. But those are true fans. Anybody that tells me they're a fanatic now, first thing I want to ask them, how many games have you been to in a row from now on? Because that is crazy. I can't say, Trey, that I've been to 781 straight games. I'm sorry, I can't do it.
I don't even think I've watched more than two or three in a row. I mean, it never seems to work out for me. But, yeah, it's pretty crazy, Tarvin.
Well, I haven't missed an Auburn game since I was, 7 years old, watching it on TV. I try to go to at least four or five a year, if possible. And that's a lot. But to imagine going to every bowl game, every away game, my gosh, I mean, what a life, legacy he left. And you know what? He didn't poison any trees. So good job, Mr. Coffey. You'll rest in peace, and we'll always remember you. I'm sure all the Alabama Nation will remember you. But I just wanted to talk about that. I thought that was cool to see that. Real quick, before Coach Dana Robinson comes on, Trey, College World Series is tomorrow night. We have an SEC team versus a Pac-12 team. What's your thoughts on it?
Well, Carmen, one of the crazy stats in that is, you know, the ACC and the SEC have been far and away the best baseball conferences in the regular season. I mean, look at the number of ranked teams the ACC had this year and last year and the year before. And yet this year will be, I think, out of the last 8 years, seven teams of those eight teams, Tarvin, the champion has come from the Pac-12 or the SEC. And I think this is the sixth straight year in a row that the SEC has had a team in the championship. So, interesting, you know, when you talk about domination in college baseball in a regular season, in the postseason it has been the Pac-12 and the SEC really holding that trophy up almost every year for the past decade. And you're talking about 70% of the time one of those teams in the last decade are going to be, you know, hoisting the championship. So another dominant year for those two squads, those two conferences.
Yeah, UCLA, just in my opinion, they're going to be very hard to beat. I think Mississippi State, they're a very confident team right now. They have 51 wins this year. UCLA has 47. I mean, it's going to be a dogfight, Trey. Give me your prediction right now. I'm going to say Mississippi State wins in game three and to take a World Series, man. Take the College World Series.
Yeah, I think Mississippi State and UCLA have really good first-line pitchers. Both of the guys have had pretty good shutout streaks going through the College World Series. And, you know, both of the guys have had really, you know, been racking up innings pitched, not allowing a whole lot of earned runs. So I think game one, I would expect to have, you know, a 1-1 game, 2-1 game, something very tight going into the last of the inning. I think game two, we'll see a little offense. I think we are going to go to a game three. Tarvin, I think it's going to be – I'm going to predict UCLA. I've been watching them. Their starting pitching has been really dominant, and their bullpen has been pretty good for this College World Series. They sort of relied on clutch hitting versus some of the, you know, offense we've seen. It's been a lower score in College World Series, too. There's been three or four shutouts in the College World Series, which is we haven't seen in about, I'd say, about 8 years. So I would say UCLA just because of the pitching, but Mississippi State's got, I think, the better bats. So we'll have to see which one wins out.
It's going to be interesting. The bullpen of UCLA, you know, they almost blew a win the other night against North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't go out quiet. The number one overall seed, they stayed alive as long as they could. But it was exciting to see them. I never thought in my wildest dreams I would see Mississippi State playing in the championship game when this whole College World Series was announced. But here we are. It goes to show you on any given day, I mean, you can get hot at the right time of year. Mississippi State's been consistent all year. But I think they've been really, really overlooked. And underrated. So, yeah. Timeout Sports Show in the chat room, Trey, talking about the Toronto Blue Jays. Want to touch on that real quick and some baseball before we get to our interview. And I'm trying to get this studio up and running. It might be now. I'm not for sure. I'm afraid to touch it almost. But let's see, the Toronto Blue Jays, my prediction to win the American League East. It didn't look good a few weeks ago, Trey. I almost just conceded it, backed off of it. 11 games in a row, the Jays are back. What are your thoughts on this, and do they have any chance of actually winning the division? They're starting to get healthy.
Well, I mean, it's kind of funny. All the players who folks said on the Blue Jays were going to really get them over the hump, and, you know, Reyes is still not contributing at all. Mark Burley's been okay. Johnson's been kind of, I would say, bad, to be honest. So it's not these guys at all. I mean, and even Batista's struggled at times. I mean, Melky Cabrera has been pretty bad, especially the rumors that he may be linked to this new steroids thing down in Florida. So they're getting sort of offense, and not even mention their starting third baseman is out still. I mean, so they got a lot of crazy injuries. A lot of the guys who they thought were contributing aren't. But 11 in a row, Tarvin, I mean, they still find themselves fourth out of five teams in the AL East. So five games back, Tarvin, and yeah, sure, absolutely. Any of these five teams could win it. But I still, you know, my pick was Boston, who sits two games above the Orioles. I still think Boston is the strong horse down the stretch here.
We'll see about that now. We'll see. I'm going to jump back on the Toronto bandwagon now. And like Timeout Sports Show said, 2 weeks ago there were 10.5 games back. And two, that's what happens when you catch fire like that and you have the people above you actually losing some, so playing 500 baseball. That's what can happen to you. So we're going to get in some baseball later, you know, hopefully next week or Wednesday or Sunday we'll get into some more baseball. But I'm very excited to see about the Braves real quick. Man, Trey, they're starting to lose. They feel like their Gattis went down with an injury. I mean, that lead keeps getting slimmer and slimmer. And you know, the Nationals are, what, 5.5, 6 games back, something like that. But the team I'm worried about is the Philadelphia Phillies. That's the team that scares me if I'm an Atlanta Braves fan, player. The Phillies could catch fire at any time. Just get them healthy. They can hit the ball. The pitching is not too bad. It's not as strong as it used to be. But, Trey, give me the percentage in your mind of the Atlanta Braves actually hanging on and winning the East. Because you know a wild card is not coming out of the East.
Well, you know, I think the Braves still have a good shot. I mean, I think the Nationals are still going to get really hot at some point. They have, you know, Strasburg under 500, but with a really good ERA. I still don't think the Phillies have what it takes. I mean, Cole Hamels is 2-11. He has not looked good all year. You know, Chase Utley, who I heard some baseball fans talking about how him coming back is going to be a contributing factor, but they're actually a game under 500 with him playing this year. So I just don't think that the Phillies have the pitching. I think they're going to be a seller probably when it comes time to after the All-Star break, when the trade deadline comes up. I think Philadelphia Phillies are going to be trading players away. I think the Nationals are going to be right there. So I think this is going to come down to the Nationals and Atlanta. And whichever team stays healthier and has that starting pitching. I mean, Atlanta's got a couple guys who are starting to get hot after being injured. I mean, look at Brian McCann with a grand slam, I think, today. I mean, this guy's starting to heat up after he missed some time earlier this year, you know, so it actually helps that, you know, Gattis, you know, goes down now because McCann's been so good now that he's coming back and gets stronger from his injury. So if Gattis can come back and be as great as he was earlier in the season, I mean, Atlanta looks pretty good, Tarvin.
Well, I'll tell you what, living in Atlanta, when it gets hot, and it's starting to get very hot, July and August roll around, these Atlanta Braves start hitting the baseball, so I look for them to add to this lead, but they have to be careful. I mean, they have to not strike out as much. They have to get their big sticks going. Hayward's going to have to really get going for these guys, and they're going to have somebody step up and actually take over the ace role in that pitching staff. So we'll talk about them. But right now we're going to go to our guest, Coach Dana Robinson. Trey, he is on hold. I just spoke with him, and thank you, Blog Talk Radio, for fixing my studio before my guest came on. I've been chatting with them since we've been doing the show, but Coach Dana Robinson joined us, I think it was last August. He joined us in studio, and it was a really exciting interview we had, but I just want to catch up with him and see what's going on with My Recruit Video. So how you doing, Coach?
I'm doing fine, Brian. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining us tonight.
No, thank you for having me.
So tell us, since the last time we spoke last year, I mean, how's everything going with my recruit video? I've been keeping
everything
up.
Everything is going quite well. As a matter of fact, this past week was a really big week. Went across the biggest hurdle there is. The NCAA certified my recruit video on the 19th of June. So that was huge. That was really huge.
Well, congratulations on that. And I've been reading your testimonials. I keep in touch with those and seeing how great these kids, I mean, how appreciative they are of you and grateful and how much they love you. So I'm just glad to see you doing a great job with these kids. And the more I see what you do, the more I appreciate it, because I know, Coach, there's a lot of recruiting services out there that are just looking to take the parents' money and really doesn't devote the time to build relationships with these kids.
Well, this is true, and I think another thing that makes my recruit video unique is the fact that I'm a high school coach myself. You know, so it allows me inroads in most places, and quite honestly, that most people can't go. Prime example, the American Football Coaches Association. By me being a member and being at the convention every year and those kind of things, I get to actually interact with college coaches besides during the season, at dinner and breakfast and wherever. And so we get to talk about kids. I get to, and kids they might ask me about. And my recruit video has also become that place where, when it becomes crunch time for them close to signing day or after signing day, that period all the way up to March, where they're still looking for kids, they know that I know about my kids, I've got a great relationship with my kids, and they understand that all these kids are qualified. As you well know, that's rule number one with my recruit video. So they like my, the college coaches like my recruit video, and I'm so happy now that they can do even more business with me, as per the NCAA rules, say. So it's great.
Good. So when you're in your line of work, I mean, how many times do you see, kid with parents really that, I mean, I guess they don't understand the process of getting recruited and I guess with very endangered of being left out, left behind, because if you don't have exposure, you're not going to get recruited.
Almost daily, because there's guaranteed to be one parent on my own team that needs to, find out some information. And then through the My Recruit Video group on Facebook, through the My Recruit Video page on Facebook, I get inboxed. And you made a good point about these other recruiting services. And as you well know, that's a real sticking point with me. One of the things that I've always believed it didn't take $2,000 to get a kid recruited. And to me, and if you're going to charge somebody $2,000, you should at least do what you say you're going to do. And what I see more than anything else, this is not happening on either accord. So all it does is just, push me more and push my recruit video more to just keep doing right by people and making these families happy and giving them the information that they need. In some cases, giving them the information that other people are making them pay for. So if I can do that and I can continue to do that and still own the business as well, of course, because it is a business, then, it's a win-win for everyone.
Yeah, I'm going to turn Trey, let him ask a question, my co-host, Trey Patterson. Trey?
Yeah, hey, how's it going, Coach?
Hey, Trey, how you doing?
Hey, Coach Allen, let me ask you this. So, now that you guys are kind of got that, how hard was it to get that NCAA recognition that you're so talking about? And kind of tell us about the process to get that.
It's a task. It's a daunting task. One of the things is that there's a window that you have to meet, and that window only opens once a year. So if you miss it, you have to wait, to the very next year. They look at every I and every T. So what happens is they go, if you got a website, they make sure to go over all the language, all the disclaimers, anything that doesn't fit their guidelines you have to change or remove. You have to do everything within the window. Then there's another window. Once they tell you that there's something that needs to be adjusted, the next thing they'll tell you is you've only got 15 days to do this. So there's always deadlines to meet. And then there's a basic criteria that you have to meet for them, which everybody doesn't meet. And I'm glad that my recruit video does, you know. So, and if you don't meet it, they will deny you immediately. And, you know, even without getting to the part where you have to, you know, make changes and, you know, things like that. But it took over a year. It took over a year to do, and I'm glad. And now, and even in that, you still have to renew every year. So it's always, it's an ongoing process. Once you're certified and to keep your certification, you have to. And if there's any changes, if you make a change to the website, if you make a change to the name, if you, whatever, you have to let them know immediately.
Yeah, it's a really difficult process. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, it is. It absolutely is.
It just gives you more exposure now to, you know, a better base to be able to reach these kids. But, you know, when I was in high school, you know, I didn't know anything about this. Not that I'd have been recruited anyway, trust me. I mean, I was an average athlete at best. But, I mean, it would have been nice to see, because I played with a lot of kids that were my age that were actually, you know, looking back at them, they could have played college ball somewhere, whether it be basketball, football, or baseball, but yet they didn't know anything about it. The coaches really didn't educate the kids about it, and it just wasn't, you know, as popular as it is now. So I've looked at your packages, Coach, and they all look very reasonable, and it just looks like to me the common denominator with all of your packages is that you devote your time to build relationships with these coaches and find the right, you know, the right fit for these kids. So tell us your success rate lately. How many kids have you signed?
Well, so far since 2000, I'll go all the way back from its inception, since 2007, when we were just a little, you know, fledgling little deal, just getting off the ground, or up to this point, it's been 100%. It's been 100%. Now with the swell, and I can't even make an exception, because I had one kid that decided to go to the prep school route, but that's what he wanted to do, because he'd actually only played American football for 2 years. But he still signed on with a school, but he's going to do the prep school for 1 year. So it's been 100%. And I think it's because of that pricing that you mentioned, these packages. And you talk about exposure. The number one thing that happens with every kid that signs on to become my recruit is exposure to every school in the country. And, you know, every kid is not a D1 kid. Every kid is not a D1, you know, FCS kid. But there are four different levels where there's scholarship money at. You know, D1, D1 FCS, D2, and NAIA. You might not fit in one, but you may fit in the other. Plus, by there being like over 100, 850 schools in this country, that's 850 eye tests, 850 criteria. So you might not meet one, but you may meet another. And the main thing is, if they see you, you're good. But if they never see you, then there's a problem. And it's, unfortunately, there's still more kids that don't get seen than the ones that do. You know, they have videos out there on YouTube or on Huddle or whatever, but that's all they're doing. They're just sitting there.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of kids and the parents think, well, my kid's good enough. Let's just do it on our own and send a tape on to these 10 schools or whatever. So what are the chances of those schools actually looking at a tape, Coach, from them or their parents compared to being sent by you?
About 10 schools, about 0.25%. The reason being, most parents don't know who to send it to, you know, at the particular university. The other thing is, if it's the parents sending it, that's going to be a problem, because they're not recruiting the parents. They're recruiting the child. So all those kind of mailings should always come from the student. Plus, 10 schools just isn't enough. You know, this becomes a law of averages kind of thing. You know what I mean? So if one of my recruits signs on and this blast goes out, normally average maybe after a day or two after he signs on average they get 50 to anywhere, based on their ability, of course, and how good they look on tape, but they get anywhere from 50 to 150 emails back from college coaches at different levels, you know, and it goes from there. And that's how we start building those relationships. The number one reason why that happens, respect. College coaches respect what my recruit video does, you know, and they know that without question these kids are qualifiers, which is a major hurdle that they don't have to jump over. You know, whenever a kid tells me, oh, Coach, well, I'm about a 2.4 or something like that, I already know that really means 1.9. always subtracted by a half when you're with those borderline kids like that, which means you're not a qualifier. Now, are there JUCO, you know, opportunities for you? Absolutely. And there's a ton of JUCO coaches that love my recruit video as well. But on the whole, these kids are trying to go to four-year universities. And if you're not a four-year university qualified, then you get put, you know, in a whole other category. But you also have kind of like, you know, put yourself in that category, unfortunately.
Trey?
Hey, Coach. Coach, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
All right. Hey, one more question. I just want you to sort of help educate some of our listeners. It's one of those things that get sort of misunderstood in a lot of our chat rooms that we follow. Can you kind of walk the listener's story, what it really means? Because a lot of people think that, hey, when a school offers a scholarship to a player, that sort of means something, you know, solid. And it really doesn't. Can you kind of explain what that means in kind of layman's terms for us all?
It means that they're interested in you, but they're more interested in you than they are somebody that they haven't offered a scholarship to. And what parents need to understand and players need to understand even more, let's say you play defensive back. Say you're a free safety. They've offered you, and they have possibly offered 10 other free safeties in your same class throughout the country. Now, what happens after that is you showing them how much desire you want to be part of their program, and them showing them how much desire they want, how much they desire you to be part of their program. Okay? After that initial verbal offer comes, and that's all it is, it's nothing but talk. Trust me, it's nothing but talk. What it really gets interesting after that, because if they really want a kid, then they'll really show it. Okay, offers aren't official until they're in writing. There's nothing. Scholarship offers are nothing but contracts, and so until they're becoming writing, and they can't do that till after September 1st of your senior year, then or the first day of school for you or your senior year, then that's when it all becomes official. Besides then, it's just talk. And, you know, you hear kids say, well, I've got 14 offers, I've got 15 offers. Well, if you're a junior right now and you haven't started your senior year, that's beautiful. It's great for you. You've got the 15 offers. But right now you just got 15 verbal offers. You have nothing official or nothing solid. It doesn't become solid till after they put you in writing. One of my kids I had last year, he had 18 verbal offers. But after the first day of his senior year, it really came down to 6 written offers. And, of course, those offers are different. Some are full. Some are for tuition and books. Some are, you know, whatever. And that's something else that, you know, I'm sure we don't have time to touch on today, but is a whole nother part of this, you know, scholarship thing as well.
Well, that's a great question, Trey, and a great answer, Coach. And I'm just curious, like, when you meet these kids and you're trying to help them, how hard is it? You know, everybody thinks they're SEC material, I bet. So how hard is it to tell a kid that, hey, you're not good enough for Auburn, Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, one of those SEC schools? You need to take a step back and look at some other programs. How difficult is that in your profession to actually have to tell the parents and kids?
Brian, you know this is kind of a loaded question for me, because you know I'm a straight shooter. I give it to them straight. It's not a problem at all. It's not a problem at all, because I don't feel like I'm doing them. I feel like I'm doing them a disservice if I'm not completely honest with them, and that's what it basically boils down to. You know, what's my favorite? Get in where you fit in. If you don't, you obviously have next level ability, okay? But your next level ability isn't at Illinois or Baylor. Okay, but your next level ability is at Illinois State. You know, so you're still a Division I player, but you're a Division I FCS player. So be it. That's where you got the same kid I was just talking about a few minutes ago that had all the offers. It came down to about 6. He had an offer from Minnesota. He had written offer from Minnesota, and he chose to go to F1 FCL because that's where he fit the best. That's who wanted him the best. The year before last, I had a kid named Ricky Backstrom that was right here from the Chicago area, went to Hubbard High School. When I left the AFCA convention, the kid had D1 offers from Grambling, Hampton, you know, some other historically black colleges. But he chose to go to Division II Oklahoma Panhandle State because, Coach, I remember him telling me this, that's where I fit the best. You like, just like you told me, when I took my visits, the whole nine yards, this is where I fit the best. And, you know, you have to, and the parents that don't want to hear that or they can't take it, then it also lets you know that these are people that you really won't be able to deal with, you know, or actually, you know, get the things done that need to be done for their child because they have this one thing in their head, but they won't listen to the person that does this every day and understands how this works. You know, if a kid's a D1 kid, there's going to be a million and one ways that it shows that he's a D1 FBS kid. If he's not, then that'll show as well. Plus, let's look at the numbers. 85 out of 100 kids don't go D1 anyway. Okay, by the second year, 80% or no, actually almost 85% of those ones that of those 15 that did. Aren't at that school anymore. That's why when you watch the D2 national championships or the D1 FCS championships, you hear all these kids that were transferred. This kid transferred from Georgia. That's why. They went to a school where they really didn't fit or weren't getting the playing time that they thought they were going to get, didn't get what they were promised, and they wound up transferring anyhow. You know?
I'm sure that's one thing you have to tell kids is be careful what coaches are promising you that you'll start right away and you'll do this because once they get that signature, I mean, it's that's all they care. It's almost like the military. But speaking of the military, Coach, I just wanted to ask this question. How many kids do you come in contact with from a military family that's moved a lot during their junior high and high school, you know, careers? They never got settled down into that one school, really. How do you help them?
You know what? I've yet to encounter any military families. I have had two kids that were from three, two from South Africa and one from Canada. But the one from Canada, he went to school in Canada and wound up signing with a college in Canada, York University in Toronto. And the two kids from South Africa were, you know, two from South Africa, and one from Nigeria. And what happened with them, they were going to school in the States. They still go to school in the States. And the only problem I found I would get into with them is when it was a hot time for college coaches, like an open period where they could actually contact athletes and things like that. These guys were out of the country. You know, so that was a, you know, like a logistics communication problem. But up to this point, I haven't had any military kids or the kids that have moved back and forth or anything that just yet. In these 6 years, it's funny you ask that because I haven't had a military kid yet, not to my knowledge.
So are you really dealing with just Chicago kids, or do you have
Caleb, this past year. Like I said, I had one kid in Ontario. I had one from Nigeria, two from South Africa, California, Alabama, of course the Chicago area, one from Texas, and you know, it goes on, Pennsylvania, it goes on and on. This year, Las Vegas, Chicago area,
wow.
Alabama, Texas, Oklahoma, Nigeria again, just all over, international.
Well, a guy in the chat room, Jonathan Miklos, asked if you know any kids from, was it Tarpon Springs, Florida?
From Tarpon Springs, Florida?
Yeah.
Is it Tarpon Springs? I may. But because there may be a kid from Tarpon Springs, Florida, that have joined my group. I had a couple kids. There were one kid that was my recruit from Vero Beach, Florida, last year. His name was Connor Moore. He's got a scholarship to Princeton now. And then I had other kids that were in my group, my recruit video group on Facebook from Vero Beach, and numerous others from Florida. There's so many. It's just because my group on Facebook has almost 1,700 members. So there's kids from every corner, north, south, east, west, you know. So, but the Florida area is extremely well represented, and it's also 400 college coaches in the group too. So it's, you know, the whole country is represented real well, and internationally also.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question. You don't have to answer this if you don't want to. But who's your favorite coach? And who's your favorite coach so far you've met that maybe coached in the SEC conference? That's the best
that,
one to deal
coach
with.
Coach in the SEC?
Yeah.
Favorite coach that I've met that coached in the SEC? Well, I've got to go with Mr. Saban.
Come on now.
I hate to say it. Now, I thought you were going to take the question in a different direction because I had an answer already. But when you said SEC, you made me narrow it down to that.
Okay, let's not say SEC. Let's just say overall.
Pat Fitzgerald.
And major college.
Northwestern.
Pat he's
Fitzgerald,
a great coach,
Northwest, Northwestern. Pat is the truest of the true. He's as passionate. I like real people, and Pat is as real as they come. And I know I'm probably partial because he is a Southsider. He is from Chicago. He's a White Sox fan, you know. But Pat is really good people. He's really genuine. I love the way his program is run because one of the things I love that nobody knows about Pat, he really makes his players get involved with the rest of the school. You know, they're not uh-huh. just there to be football players. You get points for going to softball games, going to volleyball games, to going to something at the theater, these kind of things. Because by him being a Northwestern grad, it's something that's a place that he's really proud of. And he understands that, you know, these kids are student athletes, and we're trying to also mold their minds and expand their horizons and the whole nine yards. And he makes sure that when they graduate from there, they're complete people. That's easy. That's Pat Fitzgerald, hands down.
Well, I noticed a few years ago how good of a coach he was, watching how the players respond. You can always tell how players respond to coaches. I mean, these guys give it 110%. For this man, he gives it 110% every day he's out there. You can tell. And I really like him. I'm glad you said that because Northwestern is one of the teams I have as my sleepers this year in the Big Ten. So
they're going to do very well. They are going to do very, very well this year.
Well, Coach, before we go, give us some ways, everybody listening out there, remember this is archived too, so, you know, forever they'll be able to click on this episode and get your information. Can you give us your contact information, how the kids can get in touch with you?
Okay, the website is www.myrecruitvideo, which is all one word, .com. On Twitter, at myrecruitvideo, or if you want to reach me directly, just at Coach D. Rob, but at myrecruitvideo on Twitter. By phone, it's 708-820-9288. That's 708-820-9288. MyRecruitVideo.com. Oh, yeah, and the MyRecruitVideo page on Facebook is just Facebook.com/MyRecruitVideo. And then the group is Facebook.com/groups/MyRecruitVideo. More than helping all the kids that want to join and ask to join the group, please do. Parents, the whole nine yards. But if you're with a recruiting service or, you know, one of these sites out here, don't try it. Don't try it.
Well, Coach, I'm going to get that T-shirt that I'm looking on your website and everything. I'm going to order a T-shirt. If anybody out there would like to order anything, feel free to do it. I mean, I've enjoyed the interview, and I really appreciate you coming on. Trey and I look forward to this interview, and I'm sure all the listeners really enjoyed it and would like to have you back on soon.
Okay, thank you, and go Blackhawks.
All right, take care.
All right, thank
you. Good to see you. Good to hear from you again. I'm sure Jonathan loved to hear that, Trey. Go Blackhawks there. Game 6 tomorrow in Boston. My prediction is they close it out tomorrow night. But great interview, great guy, Coach Dana Robinson. Really good stuff, Trey.
Absolutely, good interview.
And next Sunday night, we're going to – still stay in the college football world of recruiting, and we're going to have an interview with Tom Luganville is coming back to weigh in sports talk. We're very excited about that, so looking forward to that one.
Yeah, I mean, The Tom's going to come back on our show, kind of, you know, again, very excited to have him back on and talk to him about the upcoming college football season.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about. I'm trying to get JC back on, JC Sherbert from CBS. He'll be on soon. Just for Jason Minson, Trey, I'm getting the Minnesota Gopher CBS recruiting analyst on to talk about nothing but the Minnesota Gophers. So I'm sure Jason will be setting some time aside to listen to that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I have to brag on the show a little bit, Trey. I haven't done it yet, this show, but Wednesday night show we had was we're over 40,000 listeners. And it's been a while since we've had that many. I mean, it's good when you combine stuff, but 40,000 listeners to a Wednesday night show in June. I have to give a shout out to the fans out there and people supporting the show and Blog Talk Radio because it's growing. I'm just looking for 100,000 with the Tom Luganville interview as well. And when football season cranks up, I'm looking for 150,000.
No, it's definitely possible.
And I wanted to remind people that we are accepting businesses for advertisement. If you'd like to advertise with us, please get in touch with me. We've got several out there right now. We're working on several sponsors, actually. Nothing exclusive right now, but we just want several sponsors to sponsor the show. And we're going to take this to another level. I'm very excited about it, and I want to thank everyone, you know, for supporting the show. And real quick, I'm going to take a call while the studio is finally working. From a 917 area code, you're on Way In Sports. Who's this and where are you from?
Yeah, Rob, I'm actually calling from Philly. I'm going to talk a little baseball. Can we do that?
Sure, go ahead.
I just want to chime in a little bit. From the Philadelphia area, everybody is bashing Ryan Howard. Go to Philly.com, Philadelphia Inquirer, all the major news networks. Let me ask you a question. Do you think his production is off, and do you think they made a mistake by signing him for that long of a deal through 16?
Well, I'll answer it first. I'll let Trey, he knows more about Ryan Howard probably than I do, but we all know that Ryan Howard doesn't heat up until right now. I mean, he had two home runs yesterday, I believe, and I think he is starting to heat up, and I think once everybody starts getting healthy in this Philadelphia lineup, I think we'll see a different Ryan Howard, Trey. What do you think about his contract?
Well, I'll be honest. I'm on the other side of that. Ryan Howard has been in the league about 10 years. He's a power guy who always has struck out a lot. I mean, he's not a guy who you're expecting to hit 300, but, you know, Tarvin, looking at what he's done so far this year, his production is down a little bit. I mean, he's projected to hit about 30 bombs and drive in 104 runs, so that's not too bad for his sort of on-pace average for this year. But he's also, you know, on pace to strike out 193 times, which would be, he's done that before in his career. He struck out near 200 times. So he's kind of on pace from what we've seen in him in the previous years. But I'll be honest, Tarvin, I think I'm a little concerned with his production this year. I mean, he's .281 average. I actually like. But I just think that Ryan Howard this year, I kind of like what he's doing. I think he's getting a little too much criticism in this season because his totals, I mean, this guy is not going to be hitting 40 bombs and driving in 140 runs. It's just not going to happen. I mean, he hasn't driven in 140 runs really since the 2009 season. So we're looking at a guy who is a little older, but if you get 100 RBIs out of him, I think you got to be happy if you're a Phillies fan. I really do. Especially if he's hitting .280 for the rest of the way.
Well, you know, I mean, I just wanted to kind of segue with something else here. You know, it ties in with LeBron James in Cleveland, Ryan Howard now in Philadelphia. Back in 2006, 2008, 2009, even 2010, Ryan Howard had Jason Worth behind him. He had Raul Bonilla behind him. You know, Ruiz was juicing, so obviously he was driving in more runs. So, you know, the cast that he had behind him, you know, was kind of threatening in the fact that he had to receive pitches. Now there's no threat behind him. I mean, who do you have behind him? You got Chase Utley. He's getting older. I mean, he's barely back this year. You got Revere Rollins. You drop him down in the lineup. You got Dominic Brown. He hits a couple home runs. But then you got Mayberry. You could stick him in. But if you notice, it's just like LeBron James in Cleveland. If you don't give a star a supporting cast, you're going to dance around them. You'll double-team LeBron in Cleveland. You'll throw the balls in the dirt to Ryan Howard. You don't give him much to hit. Uh-huh. So, you know, I think a lot of these things that people rag on, and being from the Philadelphia area, there's no sports city that's more ragged on their team than Philadelphia. They'll boo you. I mean, they'll cheer you when you're doing good. They'll throw batteries from the freezer when you're doing bad. And, you know, it's true. And we're the only stadium, you know, the vet that used to have a prison in the bottom of the veteran stadium. So, you know, on that note, I think it's really disappointing that the fact that a lot of people that listen to talk show radio and follow sports, you know, they just down players for signing a big contract. But look at Jason Worth. He signed a big contract. He's surrounded by guys like Harper and you know, you got other guys in the Washington lineup that are just phenomenal. And he's horrible, horrible. I mean, ever since he left the Philadelphia Phillies, he's been horrible. And, you know, I think that a lot of people, they down sports players for signing big contracts and that fizzle out. But you also got to understand, too, that, I mean, don't you think that these teams that unload on their players and then expect one guy to do it all, it's just too much. And LeBron, for trying to go and win championships, he's been a champion his whole life. You can't blame Ryan Howard in 2016 if he decides to walk. And if he does, you know, I would see him even being a Red Sox.
Yeah, that's a good call. And thank you for the call, sir. That's a good point, Trey. I could see Ryan Howard actually ending his career in an AL park, being a DH, you know, saving his skin, not worrying about him playing defense. But he's right. I mean, you have to have people surrounding Ryan Howard right now. He's going to do his thing, but it's kind of hard when you have to carry a team on your back if everybody around you is not producing and protecting him. See, I like Ryan Howard. He does strike out too much, and it seems like he should be on the Braves right now as much as he strikes out. But he does get hot this time of year, Trey, so I'm looking to see Ryan Howard take off. And maybe the contract was a bad idea, maybe it wasn't. But I'm still thinking Ryan Howard is the reason. I was telling you earlier in the show, watch out for the Phillies right now, because when they get hot, and they can catch the Atlanta Braves if they really look back. I mean, I'm telling you, the Phillies are there. If they get healthy, I mean, they got a lot of hitters on that team. They can hit it. But the problem is with Ryan Howard, though, Trey, you know as well as I do, in fantasy, you see those numbers negative some nights because of all those strikeouts.
Yeah, and what you really want out of Ryan Howard, and, you know, the caller made some good points about his surrounding cast, but I think Dominic Brown is a fantastic end player. I'm really high on him. You know, Chase Utley's been hurt a lot, so you really can't rely on him. But, you know, one of the things about Ryan Howard is you really want to see his slugging percentage, which is at .496 right now. I mean, you're paying him all that money. You need it in the 540, 550 category. You know, back where it was, you know, even if you can get it back in 2009, which is a 571. But the point is, you need him slugging more. He's only got 10 bombs right now. You need about 30 from him to really get your money out of him. So, you know, Howard, his numbers aren't where you really want him to be contractually. But I think the caller made a point. You know, he's getting some hate that he probably shouldn't get. The guy is really, at times, been the only guy in that lineup other than Dominic Brown who's really contributing at all.
Exactly. And while we're in Philadelphia, while we're talking about Philadelphia, let's move over to the NFL real quick, because I saw something interesting today about the Eagles. Coach Chip Kelly's there. You know, I didn't know Dennis Dixon was the quarterback. He's going to be a quarterback there. And Michael Vick better watch out, because they have a good relationship with each other. But they're saying, and I just want your thoughts on this, Trey, that the Eagles' offense right now is running faster than it ever did at Oregon. I mean, it doesn't surprise me. What about you?
Well, I mean, one of the things that you got to look at with speed is, I mean, they got Jackson, you know, they got Macklin, and they got LeSean McCoy. I mean, so the Eagles have three of the faster guys in offense as it is. So if he can come up with a system where he actually uses that speed of those three young players and he gets the quarterback, whether it's Vic, you know, Dixon or whoever, Matt Barkley, I don't know, who actually can be a sort of a catalyst for the success of those young players, then it's going to be successful. But the problem they've had in the past has been DeSean Jackson injuries and Macklin injuries and LeSean McCoy injuries. So, I mean, these three guys need to stay healthy and they need to stay on the field, because, you know, it's hard to use speed when you're on the bench because you're hurt.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how the Eagles do in Chip Kelly's first year. But Dennis Dixon has always been that quarterback. Just intrigued me. And when he was in college, if he hadn't have gone down with that injury, I mean, I really don't think anybody would have beaten Oregon that year. I mean, the guy's a monster at the quarterback position, just the way he ran that offense. And when he went to Pittsburgh, you know, he was behind Big Ben, but I really thought they would try to use him more. And when Ben got injured, he came in, but he didn't play as well as I thought he would. How do you think he'll do in Philadelphia? Do you think he'll play at all this year?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I still think that, you know, this is going to be, you know, I think Vic gets the first shot here, Tarman, but I think he could have the second. I certainly don't think that Matt Barkley is ever going to see the field. So I think you're right, Tarman. He could have a chance here because we know Vic with his age and his injuries that and certainly his ineffectiveness at times. You may be looking at another guy coming in there, and, you know, Dixon's a very mobile quarterback, understanding what Chip Kelly wants to do, even though he's, you know, going to have some new wrinkles or new offense. I mean, certainly Dixon's a guy who understands Kelly.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. And the NFL is starting to get into, you know, get into full swing, all the talk. I'm starting to see the chatter coming out. We're getting close to camps going on. And Trey, I want your opinion about something in the NFL. And I can't remember if we talked about this before, but I just want to see what you think. Will the NFL ever extend the regular season, you know, from the 16 games now to possibly 18? And I just want to know if you think they will and what the players' union will think about it.
I think they will eventually. What it's going to take, and I know we talked about this on the show before, but I think it is getting momentum. But I think it's going to take some pretty big concessions, basically for the players' union, and they're going to have to get something in return. But I think when it comes down to it, they don't really make money for those four preseason games. So, you know, the kind of money they make for game games, if that makes sense. So you add two games and you add some money to that, then I think the players' union might get on board because, you know, less preseason games, which are very unpopular with players because they're, you know, generally the troublemaker-type games, especially games 3 and 4 where players get hurt. And then they lose those incentives, and a lot of these contracts are very incentive-laden. You know, at times. So you get a guy who doesn't have to worry about getting injured in those games, and they start becoming games where you can start getting those incentives in your deal. I think players might get on board with that, Tarvin.
Yeah, I just don't think so. I think they, and that's why I wanted to give my take on it. I think the players realize that, you know, this is a job, and people think that, you know, you work your office job every day, you grind it out, and then you look at NFL players, you're like, God, I wish I had their life. But after a while, they look at it, too, as a job. You know, playing football was fun at one point, but they do it for the money. But there also comes a time, you extend that season out, you take away from family time for these guys, their off time, their downtime, the time they use to heal their bodies up, to do whatever they want to. And really, some of these guys make so much money that adding 2-game salary to them is not really going to matter. It's like your boss, Trey. Say you make $100,000 a year right now, and your boss says, well, I'm going to give you a raise. I'm going to prorate it, and you're going to work Saturday and Sunday every week. You know, I mean, how would you feel about that? I mean, you make money, you support your family, but would you give in to working 7 days a week for just a little more money?
Well, you got to think, Tarvin, they're working these games anyway, because right now these games are in the preseason, so they're there anyway. So, you know, this isn't extending the season any. It's gonna come on the front end, and it's going to – at least the latest proposal that I've seen is going to be a front end 2 weeks, not a back end. And so it would basically replace 2 of the games that are on the field anyway. And the preseason would only be 2 games versus 4.
Yeah. Well, guys in the studio right now, let me know in the chat room if y'all want back on in a minute. I'll get you in. And right quick, we're going to move on before we go to Hernandez and the New England Patriots trade. I mean, this came out of nowhere, really. All of a sudden, they find a dead body. And Aaron Hernandez is all over it, really. I mean, you're a lawyer, Trey. I'm not a lawyer. But, I mean, you've been a lawyer. How does this look to you? How does this case look? Does it look like Hernandez is guilty?
Well, I mean, guilt or innocence is hard to say. What you can say is that they're clearly focusing on something that happened at Hernandez's home. And that Hernandez seems to be a person who's involved, whether he was involved in the killing or whether he was involved in the covering up. It certainly seems like there's some very odd evidence that's come out of here that is not good for Hernandez, to say the least. I mean, his security system was destroyed, which indicates, you know, almost like he's trying to cover up, you know, what maybe tapes that were going on, maybe recordings, that kind of stuff. He had a cell phone, Tarvin, that had been smashed, which again it seems to indicate that someone's trying to at least discard or get rid of some evidence that may be on that phone. Today, Tarvin, the home was searched for about 4 hours. Again, they actually had canines go in the house, which means they're looking for some sort of evidence that dogs can pick up. So whether it's ballistic, whether it's maybe a gun, whether it's some sort of body or part or whatever. So it's got to be something the dogs can sniff. So they're looking for something. And then also a local locksmith actually came to the house today as well, which indicates they're trying to get into a safe or something like that, and maybe Hernandez was had in his home to keep something locked away. So I mean they're focusing in on some very specific areas, and with dogs and locksmiths coming in. So I think he's clearly the focus point of this investigation. And now really it's going to come down to whether whether he was. I think it's clear that he's probably involved in some way in this death and this murder. And whether he's the trigger guy or whether he was there, just sitting on the sidelines when somebody else did it. Either way, Tarvin, obstruction of justice is probably going to come down an arrest for that. If nothing else, I would look for that arrest coming this week.
Well, it wouldn't be so bad if he didn't shoot. He shot a guy, one of his friends, I believe. He shot at his shoulder, and it went up to his eye. And so the guy's very violent. He has a bad temper, and he's had it for a very long time. And, you just never know. He gets mad one night. The guy's been around. He was around him, at his house, they believe, and just a mile away to find your body. I just don't know. They took 15 bags of evidence today, I believe, or yesterday, whenever it was, Trey. So in that 15 bags, do you think they found something that they knew what they were looking for, or you just think they went and gathered anything they could possibly find at that?
Well, the way a search warrant works is they went to a judge and they said, we think that this kind of evidence is in a certain place. So they have to have a particular thing they're looking for, and they have to have a certain place. The way it works is, say I'm looking for a gun, Tarvin. I get a warrant from a judge. I can't go into a home and look for a gun in a place that a gun wouldn't be found. So I can look in drawers, under beds. But I can't open up, say, your cabinet, that you have medicine in your bathroom, so because a gun can't be located in there. So now if they're looking for computers, things that they can control, they can pull all their hard drives. They're looking for communications with somebody. They can pull anything that can be a communication. So now depending on how their scope of their warrant, Tarvin, they could be pulling evidence, all kinds of evidence, but it's clear they have to go to the judge, the magistrate, and say, hey, this is the kind of stuff that we have a reasonable belief is in his home in a certain place. And, depending on what it is, they can tear the house completely apart, because if it's small enough, you can search anywhere.
Yeah, that's a good point. I thought Sonia was going to come on, but she's going to have to step off right now. I was about to get her on, but... Yeah, this doesn't look good. And looking at the Patriots right now, Trey. We talk about Hernandez, but how is this really going to affect Tom Brady in New England? He lost Wes Welker, Gronkowski's hurt, probably won't play, and now losing Hernandez, that's a huge part of his receiving corps that is gone. Who's going to step up in that role and actually produce? Because I don't think he's coming back. New England's already told him he couldn't be around anywhere. With the organization. So who's going to step up, and how will this affect the Patriots?
Well, I think Danny Amendola is going to be a push for Wes Welker. But, really at tight end, this is going to actually, this game, depending on Gronkowski and his timetable, they may be out without sort of a decent or any serviceable tight end for quite a while. Now, there's a couple guys out there in free agency who might be okay. But you're right. This is certainly – an issue for the, not only for legally for Hernandez and medically for Gronkowski, but, for the Patriots offense, I've heard some whispers that, people are saying, well, this means Tim Tebow is going to play tight end, but that's not going to happen, Tarvin. I don't see that happening at all.
And Jonathan, I think Tebow is going to play some tight end. They're going to get him into some packages or something. What do you think?
No,
Go ahead, Trey.
Sorry, John, I didn't realize you were wrong. Go ahead, man.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to try with T-Bone, get him incorporated a little bit here and there, but let's not forget that the Patriots drafted Zach Sudfeld, the tight end from Nevada, who's, you know, an athletic receiving tight end. So, you know, with, you know, Hernandez, with this whole situation, and we don't know how long Gronkowski's going to be out, they're going to have at least one receiving tight end. And looking at it, you know, Daniel Fells and Michael, I can't pronounce his last name, the other two tight ends on the roster aren't really receiving threats. So, you know, the receivers that they drafted this year, and Josh Boyce and Aaron Dobson, are really going to need to step up for the Patriots with the loss of Hernandez and the injury to Gronk.
Yeah, Trey?
Well, I mean, you know, Jonathan brought up a good point on that draftee this year. I'm not so sure developmentally he's ready to be a frontline guy. I mean, unless he gets real good real quick. But, you know, the Patriots are a team that has been they've sort of evolved in a lot of ways. So we'll have to see if they evolve back, because they haven't always been a team under Brady who has utilized the tight ends as much as they have with Gronkowski and Hernandez. I mean, so we'll have to see if they go back to a team that relies more on receivers, because, you know, Brady's the kind of guy who likes to get the ball around, but this, you know, the tight ends have become so, you know, sort of crucial for his passing game. You know, we'll have to see if Bill Belichick can sort of amend his game plan to see, you know, hey, okay, we're no longer a team that has these strong, physical, huge dudes who can go down the field and catch it in the middle of the field anymore. Do they spread the offense out a little bit more and go for these smaller guys like Amendola and put him in the Wes Welker role? You know, I don't know, Tobin. It's going to be interesting to see not only how long Gronk's out, but also, you know, what Bill Belichick can do to sort of make his offense work at the level it was, because we all know Tom Brady is not getting any younger.
Well, I'll tell you guys that New England was my preseason favorite in their division, but now they're not going to be. There's no way you can lose your top three receivers in an offense like that. And, you know, the New England Patriots aren't known for a power running game or a big running game attack. Tom Brady is a great quarterback, but he is going down just a little bit. Now you take three of his top weapons away, it's just going to be very hard to replace that. And, you know, the New England defense is terrible. I mean, who are they going to rely on? Tom Brady can't do it all by himself. This is the NFL. These guys are very good in all facets of the game. So the Patriots now better watch out for teams like, you know, I'm not saying Buffalo because I'd never say that, but Miami is a team that could sneak into that division and take it, Jonathan. I wouldn't be surprised to see them move up to the favorites.
You know, Miami is a team with some talent that has a chance to put it all together. It'll rely if Tannehill has the sophomore slump or not. But, you know, we're still talking about Bill Belichick here, guys. We're talking about the best coach in the NFL. If anybody can figure out a way to piece something together and you know, pull together a winning season, I think it's Bill Belichick.
That kills my fantasy team, though, Trey. Having Tom Brady on it is one of my main players, man. That's going to be hard. Do you think I could find Tom Brady off on someone this year before the season starts?
That's possible. But one thing you got to remember, Tarvin, is, you know, the Patriots were 6-0 in their division last year. I mean, this was a very weak division, and I don't see a whole lot of improvement. I mean, you got a rookie quarterback for the Buffalo Bills. You got Mark Sanchez and a possible rookie quarterback for the Jets. So there's four games right there that Belichick can sort of just feast off inexperience in that division. And you have a sophomore who, by the way, you and I railed on last year as not being ready, and I'm not so sure that he's going to take another huge leap this year, and Ryan Tannehill. So, you know, this is not the quarterback division where Bill Belichick needs to score 40 points to beat all these teams. I mean, they can probably beat the Jets, the Dolphins, and the Bills, you know, right now on paper, you know, with 20 points each week. So, you know, Tarvin, I still think that this is New England's division, even without Hernandez and Gronk, and even with Amendola replacing Walker.
Yeah, that was a great point you made about the division and the quarterbacks. That's a great point. And Jonathan, I'm with Trey on that. After listening to what he said, there's really not a threat at quarterback even with their losses, really, that can really threaten the New England Patriots.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree. You know, Buffalo with Kevin Cobb and E.J. Manuel, no. Jets with Geno Smith and Mark Sanchez, no. I mean, Tannehill has to make a huge step forward, but, I don't expect – living in South Florida and seeing all the hype around Tannehill, not just the Dolphins, but Tannehill himself, I think it's a little much, especially since the Dolphins' running game is not going to be as strong as it was last year, and it wasn't that strong last year. I think just giving him Mike Wallace doesn't make him the second coming of Peyton Manning like the people down here in South Florida think he is.
Yeah. Well, Trey, before we get out of here, tell us about what Luke Dekel signed today, right?
Yeah, and the big thing really with this is not the Jaguars signed, the number two overall player, but the big sort of, I guess, and maybe I'm making more of it than I am, Tarvin. But this guy got all guaranteed money, and he got a $13.799 million signing bonus. He's going to make more than the number one overall pick, Eric Fisher. And, Tarvin, I mean, one is, do you think that the Jaguars overpaid him? And certainly, what do you think this means for number one overall picks if the guy right behind you is going to get more money than you?
Well, I mean, it's just the matter of who your agent is, really. You know, the team that chose him, you know, obviously knew what they could pay him, but also the agent knew what he could get out of Jacksonville. So you have to tip your hat to the agent right now, and you have to tip your hat to Jacksonville for actually rewarding this guy because, you know, honestly, he was the best player in the draft. I don't know why he didn't go first, guys. I still scratch my head over that. But, I mean, Trey, the agent in this deal is actually the one he should be giving a big kiss and sending $1 million to right now.
Well, don't worry, Tarvin. He's probably getting 10%. So, you know, but, you know, I just think, Tarvin, I just think giving a rookie in the NFL, no matter what pick he is, all guaranteed money, I think is a bad precedent. I mean, if this guy goes out and is a dud like many top five picks have been before him, and I don't care what anybody says, there's no such thing as a guaranteed pick. No matter how hype they come in, no matter how talented they are, you know, whether it's injuries or randomness, some of these guys don't pan out. When you give a guy as much money as you just did to Jockle, I mean, man, you are in trouble if he doesn't work out. And he has to work out at the number two overall pick level. So we'll have to see, Jacksonville. I mean, this is one of the reasons why your organization struggled so much in the past is you've been really bad with some first-round picks.
Mm-hmm. So, Trey, what did the first overall pick get? Has he signed yet?
Yeah, he's signed, and I don't have his contract up right now, so you caught me a little off guard with that one, but I know he's making more. Jonathan, you have that stat up?
I am actually looking for his contract right now. The only thing I'm getting is that he's making less than Jockle.
Yeah.
Actually, you know why he's actually making more, believe it or not? Which is why everybody who ever complains about playing for the Jaguars or the Dolphins or the Bucks needs to stop. No income tax.
No income tax, yeah.
Yes, that's why he's making more money. No income tax.
Well, that and the guaranteed part of it, right?
Yeah, well, the guaranteed is more. But yeah, it's actually, believe it or not, it's actually the fact that the state of Florida has no state income tax is the reason why he's being paid more than Fisher. And we're talking about the guy that came out a couple of days ago and said being the number two overall pick wasn't pleasant. It he was, you know, mad and frustrated, but he's happy he's in Florida. So I have a feeling he's going to come out hungry.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, how many times, Trey or Jonathan, whoever can answer this, how many times has this happened, say, in the last 10 years that the second pick made more than the one?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Not that I remember.
I know Cam, when he went number one, that he got paid, you know, more than anyone else. And That is kind of weird, though, but the income tax thing is right with the guaranteed money. But, Trey, one thing about offensive linemen, I mean, when you've seen them play like you have, well, how you have watched him play, they're almost guaranteed that they're going to be good. Look at his body size, his strength, his height and everything. It's better to do that than give a wide receiver or someone or a running back that kind of money, because you know how he's going to turn out. He's going to be good in the NFL.
Well, I think the chances, I mean, you're right, there have been a lot of flops, especially at receiver. I mean, you can go through the draft and you can see just tons of flops at receiver. I mean, and heck, Jacksonville has their own when they tried to take a quarterback and turn him into a receiver, and they picked him in the first round. I mean, that was a terrible move. But, I mean, if you're going to give somebody guaranteed money, you might as well make it a guy who can take up the blind side of your quarterback. But, you know, still, Tarvin, I mean, when you're talking about that kind of money, no matter what position he's playing, he better produce, and he has to start next year. I mean, because they don't have a good quarterback, so.
Well, guys,
right.
It's been a great show so far. I appreciate everybody coming out. Sorry we had some studio difficulties earlier in the show. I wanted to get Jonathan on here and Sonia. And thanks for all y'all listening to the show, Jimmy in the chat room. Everybody else is gone, and we appreciate you listening. Thanks, Coach Dana Robinson, for coming out, joining us for that great interview. And like I said, next Sunday night, Tom Luganville will be on the show. We'll have that interview for you. So make sure to tell everyone you know to come in and listen, and we will be talking college football, really getting his opinions on which teams are going to be out there good this year, which teams can surprise, and actually get some 2014 recruiting class news. So it's going to be an exciting show. I'm glad to have him back on the show. But Jonathan, Trey, thanks for joining me tonight. And we'll try to do a show Wednesday night. If not, definitely, again, we'll be on next Sunday night. But I'll let y'all know very soon. Thanks for coming, everybody. Have a great work week. Don't work too hard. Tomorrow's Monday. I'm off work, Trey. Thank God, so I get a day off to rest. And y'all take care and have a good week.